Chapter 25. Bobby. Bobby's hand terminal began playing reveille at 4:30 a.m. local time, what she and her mates might have grumbled and called "Oh Dark 30," back when she'd been a Marine and had mates to grumble with. She'd left her terminal in the living room, lying next to the pull-down cot she used as a bed, the volume set high enough to have left her ears ringing if she'd been in there with it. But Bobby had already been up for an hour. In her cramped bathroom, the sound was only annoying, bouncing around her tiny apartment like radio in a deep well. The echoes were a sonic reminder that she still didn't have much furniture or any wall hangings. It didn't matter. She'd never have a guest. The reveille was a mean-spirited little joke Bobby was playing on herself. The Martian military had formed hundreds of years after trumpets and drums had been a useful means of transmitting information to troops. Martians lacked the nostalgia the UN military had for such things. The first time Bobby had heard a morning reveille, she'd been watching a video on military history. She'd been happy to realize that no matter how annoying the Martian equivalent, a series of atonal electronic blats, was, it would never be as annoying as what the Earth boys woke up to. But now Bobby wasn't a Martian Marine anymore. "I'm not a traitor," Bobby said to her reflection in the mirror. Mirror Bobby looked unconvinced. After the blaring trumpet call's third repetition, her hand terminal beeped once and fell into a sullen silence. She'd been holding her toothbrush for the last half hour. The toothpaste had started to grow a hard skin. She ran it under warm water to soften it back up and started brushing her teeth. "I'm not a traitor," she said to herself, the toothbrush making the words unintelligible. "Not." Not even standing here in the bathroom of her UN-provided apartment, brushing her teeth with UN toothpaste and rinsing the sink with UN-provided water. Not while she clutched her good Martian toothbrush and scrubbed until her gums bled. "Not," she said again, daring Mirror Bobby to disagree. She put the toothbrush back into her small toiletry case, carried it into the living room, and placed it in her duffel. Everything she owned stayed in the duffel. She'd need to move fast when her people called her home, and they would. She'd get a priority dispatch on her terminal, the red and gray border of the MCRN syncom flashing around it. They'd tell her that she needed to return to her unit immediately, that she was still one of them, that she wasn't a traitor for staying. She straightened her uniform, slid her now quiet terminal into her pocket, and checked her hair in the mirror next to the door. It was pulled into a bun so tight it almost gave her a facelift, not one single hair out of place. "I'm not a traitor," she said to the mirror. Front hallway Mirror Bobby seemed more open to this idea than bathroom Mirror Bobby had. "Damn straight," she said, then slammed the door behind her when she left. She hopped on one of the little electric bikes the UN campus made available everywhere and was in the office 3 minutes before 5 a.m. Sorin was already there. No matter what time she came in, Sorin always beat her. Either he slept at his desk or he was spying on her to see what time she set her alarm for each morning. "Bobby," he said, his smile not even pretending to be genuine. Bobby couldn't bring herself to respond, so she just nodded and collapsed into her chair. One glance at the darkened windows in Avasarala's office told her the old lady wasn't in yet. Bobby pulled up her to-do list on the desktop screen. "She had me add a lot of people," Sorin said, referring to the list of people Bobby was supposed to call in her role as Martian military liaison. "She really wants to get a hold of an early draft of the Martian statements on Ganymede. That's your top priority for the day, okay?" "Why?" Bobby said. "The actual statement came out yesterday. We both read it." "Bobby," Soren said with a sigh that said he was tired of explaining simple things to her, but a grin that said he really wasn't. This is how the game is played. Mars releases a statement condemning our actions. We go back channel and find an early draft. If it was harsher than the actual statement that was released, then someone in the Dip Corps argued to tone it down. That means they're trying to avoid escalating. If it was milder in the early draft, then they're deliberately escalating to provoke a response. But since they know you'll get those early drafts, then that's meaningless. They'll just make sure you get leaks that give you the impression they want you to have. See? Now you're getting it, Soren said. What your opponent wants you to think is useful data in figuring out what they think. So get the early draft, okay? Do it before the end of the day. But no one talks to me anymore because now I'm the UN's pet Martian. And even though I'm not a traitor, it is entirely possible that everyone else thinks I am, she thought. Okay. Bobby pulled up the newly revised list and made the first connection request of the day. Bobby, Avasarala yelled from her desk. There was any number of electronic means for getting Bobby's attention, but she almost never saw Avasarala use them. She yanked her earbud free and stood up. Soren's smirk was of the psychic variety. His face didn't change at all. Ma'am, Bobby said, taking a short step into Avasarala's office. You bellowed? No one likes a smartass, Avasarala said, not looking up from her desk terminal. Where's my first draft of that report? It's almost lunchtime. Bobby stood a little straighter and clasped her arms behind her back. Sir, I regret to inform you that I have been unable to find anyone willing to release the early draft of the report to me. Are you standing at attention? Avasarala said, looking up at her for the first time. Jesus, I'm not about to march you out to the firing squad. Did you try everyone on the list? Yes, I... Bobby stopped for a moment and took a deep breath, then took a few more steps into the office. Quietly, she said, No one talks to me. The old woman lifted a snow-white eyebrow. That's interesting. It is, Bobby said. Avasarala smiled at her. A warm, genuine smile, then poured tea out of a black iron pot into two small teacups. Sit down, she said, waving at a chair next to her desk. When Bobby remained standing, Avasarala said, Seriously, sit the fuck down. 5 minutes talking to you and I can't tilt my head forward again for an hour. Bobby sat, hesitated, and took one of the small teacups. It wasn't much larger than a shot glass, and the tea inside was very dark and smelled unpleasant. She took a small sip and burned her tongue. It's a Lapsang Souchong, Avasarala said. My husband buys it for me. What do you think? I think it smells like hobo feet, Bobby replied. No shit, but Arjun loves it, and it's not bad once you get used to drinking it. Bobby nodded and took another sip, but didn't reply. Okay, so, Avasarala said, you're the Martian who was unhappy and got tempted over to the other side by a powerful old lady with lots of shiny prizes to offer. You're the worst kind of traitor, because ultimately everything that's happened to you since you came to Earth was because you were pouting. Shut the fuck up now, dear. The grown-up is talking. Bobby shut up and drank her awful tea. But, Avasarala continued, the same sweet smile on her wrinkled face, if I were on the other team, you know who I'd send misinformation leaks to? Me, Bobby said. You. Because you're desperate to prove your value to your new boss, and they can send you blatantly false information and not really care if they fuck your shit up in the long run. If I were the Martian counter-espionage wonks, I'd have already recruited one of your closest friends back home and be using them to funnel a mountain's worth of false data in your direction. My closest friends are all dead, Bobby thought. But no one is talking to you from back home, which means two things. They are still trying to figure out my game in keeping you here, and they don't have a misinformation campaign in place because they're as confused as we are. You'll be contacted by someone in the next week or so. They'll ask you to leak information from my office, but they'll ask it in such a way that winds up giving you a whole lot of false information. If you're loyal and spy for them, great. If not, and you tell me what they asked for, also great. Maybe they'll get lucky, and you'll do both. Bobby put the teacup back on the desk. Her hands were in fists. This, Bobby said, is why everyone hates politicians. No, they hate us because we have power. Bobby, this isn't how your mind likes to work, and I respect that. I don't have time to explain things to you, Avasarala said, the smile disappearing like it had never been. So just assume I know what I'm doing, and that when I ask you to do the impossible, it's because even your failure helps our cause somehow. Our cause? We're on the same team here. Team, let's not lose together. That is us, isn't it? Yes, Bobby said, glancing at the Buddha in his shrine. He smiled at her serenely. Just one of the team, his round face seemed to say. Yes, it is. Then get the fuck back out there and start calling everyone all over again. This time take detailed notes on who refuses to help you and the exact words they use in their refusal, okay? Solid copy on that, ma'am. Good, Avasarala said, smiling gently again. Get out of my office. Familiarity might breed contempt, but Bobby hadn't much liked Sorin right from the start. Sitting next to him for several days had ratcheted up her dislike to a whole new level. When he wasn't ignoring her, he was condescending. He talked too loud in his phone, even when she was trying to carry on a conversation of her own. Sometimes he sat on her desk, talking to visitors. He wore too much cologne. The worst thing was he ate cookies all day. It was impressive, given his rail-thin build, and Bobby was not generally the kind of person who cared at all about other people's dietary habits. But his preferred brand of cookie came out of the break room vending machine in a foil packet that crinkled every time he reached into it. At first, this had only been annoying. But after a couple of days of the crinkle-crunch-chomp-and-smack radio theater, she'd had enough. She dropped her latest pointless connection and turned to stare at him. He ignored her and tapped on his desk terminal. Sorin, she said, meaning to ask him to dump the damn cookies out on a plate or a napkin so she didn't have to hear that infuriating crinkle sound anymore. Before she could get more than his name out, he held up a finger to shush her and pointed at his earbud. No, he said. Not really a good... Bobby wasn't sure if he was talking to her or someone on the phone, so she got up and moved over to his desk, sitting on the edge of it. He gave her a withering glare, but she just smiled and mouthed, "I'll wait." The edge of his desk creaked a little under her weight. He turned his back to her. "I understand," he said, "but this is not a good time to discuss." "I see. I can probably..." "I see, yes. Foster won't..." "Yes, yes, I understand. I'll be there." He turned back around and tapped his desk, killing the connection. "What?" "I hate your cookies. The constant crinkle of the package is driving me insane." "Cookies?" Sorin said, a baffled expression on his face. Bobby thought that it might be the first honest emotion she'd ever seen there. "Yeah, can you put them on a..." Bobby started, but before she could finish, Sorin grabbed up the package and tossed them into the recycling bin next to his desk. "Happy? Well, I don't have time for you right now, Sergeant." "Okay," Bobby said, and went back to her desk. Soren kept fidgeting like he had more to say, so Bobby didn't call the next person on her list. She waited for him to speak. Probably the cookie thing had been a mistake on her part. Really, it wasn't a big deal. If she weren't under so much pressure, it wasn't the sort of thing she'd probably even notice. When Soren finally spoke up, she'd apologize for being so pushy about it and then offer to buy him a new package. Instead of speaking, he stood up. "Soren, I..." Bobby started, but Soren ignored her and unlocked a drawer on his desk. He pulled out a small bit of black plastic. Probably because she'd just heard him say the name Foster, Bobby recognized it as the memory stick Avasarala had given him a few days earlier. Foster was the data services guy, so she assumed he was finally getting around to taking care of that little task, which would at least get him away from the office for a few minutes. Until he turned and headed for the elevators. Bobby had done a little gopher work, running things back and forth to data services, and knew that their office was on the same floor, and in the opposite direction of the elevators. Huh. She was tired. She was half sick with guilt, and she wasn't even all that sure what she felt guilty about. She disliked the man, anyway. The hunch that popped into her head was almost certainly a result of her own paranoia and addled image of the world. She got up, following him. "This is really stupid," she said to herself, smiling and nodding at a page who hurried by. She was over 2 meters tall on a planet of short people. She wasn't going to blend. Soren climbed into an elevator. Bobby stopped outside the doors and waited. Through the aluminum and ceramic doors, she heard him ask someone to press 1. "Going all the way to the street level, then." She hit the down button and took the next elevator to the bottom floor. Of course, he wasn't in sight when she got there. A giant Martian woman running around the lobby of the UN building would draw a little attention, so she scrapped that as a plan. A wave of uncertainty, failure, and despair lapped at the shoreline of her mind. Forget that it was an office building. Forget that there were no armed enemy, no squad behind her. Forget that, and look at the logic of the situation on the ground. Think tactically. Be smart. "I need to be smart," she said. A short woman in a red suit who had just come up and pressed the elevator call button overheard her and said, "What?" "I need to be smart," Bobby told her. "Can't go running off half-cocked. Not even when doing something insane and stupid," she thought. "I see," the woman said, then pushed the elevator call button again several times. Next to the elevator control panel was a courtesy terminal. "If you can't find the target, restrict the target's degrees of freedom. Make them come to you." "Right." Bobby hit the button for the lobby reception desk. An automated system with an extremely realistic and sexually ambiguous voice asked how it could assist her. "Please page Soren Cotwald to the lobby reception desk," Bobby said. The computer on the other end of the line thanked her for using the UN automated courtesy system and dropped the connection. Soren might not have his terminal on, or it could be set to ignore incoming pages. Or he might ignore this one all on his own. She found a couch with a sightline to the desk and shifted a ficus to provide her cover. 2 minutes later, Soren trotted up to the reception desk, his hair more wind-blown than usual. He must have already been all the way outside when he got the page. He began talking to one of the human receptionists. Bobby moved across the lobby to a little coffee and snack kiosk and hid as best she could. After typing on her desk for a moment, the receptionist pointed at the terminal next to the elevators. Soren frowned and took a few steps toward it, then looked around nervously and headed toward the building entrance. Bobby followed. Once Bobby was outside, Her height was both an advantage and a disadvantage. Being a head and a half taller than most everyone around her meant that she could afford to stay pretty far behind Sorin as he hurried along the sidewalk. She could spot the top of his head from half a city block away. At the same time, if he looked behind him, he couldn't miss her face sticking up a good third of a meter out of the crowd. But he didn't turn around. In fact, he appeared to be in something of a hurry, pushing his way through the knots of people on the busy sidewalks around the UN campus with obvious impatience. He didn't look around, or pause by a good reflective surface, or backtrack. He'd been nervous answering the page, and he was being pointedly, angrily not nervous now. Whistling past the graveyard, Bobby felt her muscles soften, her joints grow loose and easy, her hunch slip a centimeter closer to certainty. After three blocks, he turned and went into a bar. Bobby stopped a half block away and considered. The front of the bar, a place creatively named Pete's, was darkened glass. If you wanted to duck in somewhere and see if people were following you, it was the perfect place to go. Maybe he'd gotten smart. Maybe he hadn't. Bobby walked over to the front door. Getting caught following him had no consequences. Sorin already hated her. The most ethically suspect thing she was doing was cutting out early to pop into a neighborhood bar. Who was going to rat on her? Sorin? The guy who cut out just as early and went into the same damn bar? If he was in there, and doing nothing more than grabbing an early beer, she'd just walk up to him, apologize for the cookie thing, and buy him his second round. She pushed the door open and went inside. It took her eyes a moment to adjust from the early afternoon sunlight outside to the dimly lit bar. Once the glare had faded, she saw a long bamboo bar top manned by a human bartender, half a dozen booths with about as many patrons, and no Sorin. The air smelled of beer and burnt popcorn. The patrons gave her one look and then carefully went back to their drinks and mumbled conversations. Had Sorin ducked out the back to ditch her? She didn't think he'd seen her, but she wasn't exactly trained for tailing people. She was about to ask the bartender if he'd seen a guy run through, and where that guy might have gone, when she noticed a sign at the back of the bar that said, "Pool Tables," with an arrow pointing left. She walked to the back of the bar, turned left, and found a smaller second room with four pool tables and two men. One of them was Sorin. They both looked up as she turned the corner. "Hi," she said. Sorin was smiling at her, but he was always smiling. Smiling for him was protective coloration, camouflage. The other man was large, fit, and wearing an excessively casual outfit that tried too hard to look like it belonged in a seedy pool hall. It clashed with the man's military haircut and ramrod straight posture. Bobby had a feeling she'd seen his face before, but in a different setting. She tried to picture him with the uniform on. "Bobby," Sorin said, giving his companion one quick glance and then looking away. "You play?" He picked up a pool cue that had been lying on one of the tables and began chalking the tip. Bobby didn't point out that there were no balls on any of the tables, and that a sign just behind Sorin said, "Rental balls available on request." His companion said nothing, but slid something into his pocket. Between his fingers, Bobby caught a glimpse of black plastic. She smiled. She knew where she'd seen the second man before. "No," she said to Sorin. "It's not popular where I come from." "Slate, I guess," he replied. His smile became a bit more genuine and a lot colder. He blew the chalk dust off the pool cue's tip and moved a step to the side, shifting toward her left. "Too heavy for the early colony ships." "Makes sense," Bobby said, moving back until the doorway protected her flanks. "Is this a problem?" Soren's companion said, looking at Bobby. Before Soren could reply, Bobby said, "You tell me. You were at that late-night meeting in Avasarala's office when Ganymede went to shit. Nguyen's staff, right? Lieutenant something or other?" "You're digging a hole, Bobby," Soren said, the pool cue held lightly in his right hand. "And," she continued, "I know Soren handed you something his boss had asked him to take to data services a couple days ago. I bet you don't work in data services, do you?" Nguyen's flunky took a menacing step toward her, and Soren shifted to her left again. Bobby burst out laughing. "Seriously," she said, looking at Soren. "Either stop jerking that pool cue off or take it somewhere private." Soren looked down at the cue in his hand as though surprised to see it there, then dropped it. "And you," Bobby said to the flunky, "you trying to come through this door would literally be the high point of my month." Without moving her feet, she shifted her weight forward and flexed her elbows slightly. The flunky looked her in the eye for one long moment. She grinned back. "Come on," she said. "I'm gonna get blue balls, you keep teasing me like this." The flunky put up his hands, something halfway between a fighting stance and a gesture of surrender. Never taking his eyes off Bobby, he turned his face slightly towards Soren and said, "This is your problem. Handle it." He backed up two slow steps, then turned and walked across the room and into a hallway Bobby couldn't see from where she was standing. A second later, she heard a door slam. "Shit," Bobby said. "I bet I'd have scored more points with the old lady if I'd gotten that memory stick back." Soren began to shuffle toward the back door. Bobby crossed the space between them like a cat, grabbing the front of his shirt and pulling him up until their noses were almost touching. Her body felt alive and free for the first time in a long time. "What are you going to do?" he said through a forced smirk. "Beat me up?" "No," Bobby replied, shifting to an exaggerated Mariner Valley drawl. "I'm gonna tell on you, boy."